Welcome to minute 75 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip to the 1970 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week number 15 of this podcast, is Austin Pryor of Malkovich, minute. Thank you for coming back, Austin.
You are most welcome, and looking forward.
Excellent. So episode 75 begins with Neil wanting to go to sleep and ends with Del opening the door and exits the bathroom. Okay, so yesterday we had another great bonding moment between the two of them where Neil touches upon some of the things that we all know who've seen the movie that might hurt Del a little bit because they talk about love and their wives and things like that. But we just try to move along from that. So Neil has turned off the light. He's trying to make himself comfortable in the bed. And he goes, "Can you grab those things or am I going to kick them off?" So he's got like one of the little carrying cases at the edge of his bed. And he basically wants Del to move it off so he doesn't kick it off. Even though yesterday we mentioned the fact that he's already become a little bit of a litter bug.
He doesn't care about all of the empty nacho packets or whatever around him.
Dorito packages, And then basically he continues, says, "Well, I'll tell you, as much trouble as I've had on this little journey, I'm sure one day I'm going to look back and laugh." And he begins to laugh. And finally, he's reached, Neil, I guess maybe it's the booze, he's reached a point of clarity where he's starting to realize, you know, okay, this isn't as bad looking back than it was when it was happening at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and Del laughs along with him and responds, "You think so?" And then Neil goes, "I'm laughing already." And then the two of them, begin laughing together. And Neil covers his eyes as he's saying it also, you know, trying to show a little bit of, you know, that he's reminiscing about some of the fun things that they've done together and stuff like that. And then Del goes, "Oh, God." Oh, and Neil goes, "Oh, when that car blew up." And then Del goes, "Was that seat hot or what? I feel like a big whopper." Okay, now you know what a whopper is, right?
I sure do. So,
I mean, personally, in Israel, they have opened, you know, they have a kosher Burger King, they have a kosher McDonald's, they used to have a kosher Wendy's. So, you know, I've tasted these hamburgers. Obviously, they're not cheeseburgers or anything like that, but I've tasted the real. Yeah. I've always believed that Burger King is the best. Burger King is my favorite of the fast food hamburgers. I think they do a great job with it.
Yeah.
And it was actually fun doing a little bit of research on what a Whopper is. Do you know what year the Whopper was invented? It was invented in 1957.
Wow.
One of the co-founders of Burger King, James McLemore, thought of the idea. He was in a rival product, store, fast food chain, restaurant or whatever it is in Gainesville, Florida. Yeah. And he realized that, wait a second, I need to be selling a larger burger. And so they decided to do this. And how much do you think it cost at the time to buy a Whopper in 1957?
10 cents.
37 cents.
Okay. I went two over.
Yeah. So the equivalent today is $3.41.
Okay.
Which
is that about what they cost? They would cost more than that, I would say.
I don't know. I don't know. I've never bought a Whopper in dollars. So I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, because
and the whole idea of it was, you know, that the term Whopper is to try and make it seem as if it's larger. It's the imagery of something big.
Yeah,
that's what they were trying to convey. And apparently, it took a number of years till one of the rivals was able to bring something that was a similar size, and that would be the McDonald's Quarter Pounder, which came out in the 1970s. So yeah, I mean It's pretty interesting that they.
Yeah, McDonald's were still grappling with the pickle matrix. That's a little Simpsons gag there. But Yeah, like the way I was saying that a lot of the kind of chips companies didn't get to Ireland because we had our own crisps. Kind of the same is kind of true of Galway, that like specifically where I'm from in the west of Ireland, Galway would be, it's the fourth largest city in Ireland, which is, you know, minuscule by international standards, but all the other places already had McDonald's for years, but we had a holdout because we have our own Supermax in Galway. Mm-hmm. And so Supermax for years in Galway didn't for years McDonald's in Galway didn't even turn a profit, because even though it was fairly popular, it just wasn't as popular as Supermax, and they just needed to get a foothold in the market in Galway, and they found it difficult to penetrate. So yeah, that's a little point of pride for me as a Galwegian, that we held out the Yanks. we held off McDonald's and the, you know, the irresistible force of American right. capitalism.
And then Dell continues with his joke. You know, he starts off by saying, "Was that seat hot or what? I feel like a big whopper. Turn me over, I'm done on this side. I'm afraid to look at my ass, you know. I might have those griddle marks on my ass." and they both right. continue laughing at that. And then Neil looks around and they're laughing together. And then he goes, he hears like some sort of strange noise and goes, "What is that?" Now, I had to rewind it a few times to be able to hear what it is. We hear like a crunching sound, right? And okay. at this point, Del responds, "Potato chips. They're everywhere." So in other words, he stepped on potato chips.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny that that's the way they do it. Right. And then again, it's something that you don't really notice offhand. So, all right.
No, I didn't. I inferred from him saying, "Oh, potato chips," that's what it was. That he was walking on them and stuff. But I love this scene. I love this exchange of them laughing. You know, when you're laughing along with the characters, it's a very different feeling from
yes.
laughing at the funny event or laughing at somebody's misfortune or whatever it is. It's a much warmer kind of feeling. And like I was saying in the previous minute, it's what the movie needs at this point. And I love to see, characters having humor with each other. And a lot of movies don't get that right. They forget that people in real life crack jokes and tell stories and are funny, you know, and so it's just lovely to see this little exchange. And then and this is the culmination of the bonding, because there's no greater bonding than sharing completely. Laughter. And this particular thing of when he's walking off to the toilet and Neil is still laughing and Del is laughing, and Neil goes, "Why do I feel like I'm in summer camp?" And Del like opens the door just to laugh and closes the door again, which is just a lovely touch. It's just like, he doesn't even have a quip or an answer that goes with that. He just opens the door and laughs out the door and then closes it again, which is just like...
And he seems if he's also out of breath.
Because they want to be in the same space and they want to be...
Right.
Yeah, and he is. He's out of breath.
He looks like he's trying to catch his breath by the way that he's doing it and stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, I just want to back up 1 second. So potato chips.
Yeah,
we were talking about potato chips. So what do you know about potato chips?
Well, being from Ireland, we talk a lot about the fact that we invented them, but I don't know if that's one of those things that like either it might be like just completely made up, or it might be that several people invented them in different countries at different times, so that there's a contention to it. I don't know, but we're quite proud of our crisps in Ireland, as we call them.
Yes.
And people are like very, you know, the choice between Tato crisps or King crisps or more modern brand of Hunky Dory's is very contentious. And there's a lot of, you know, Tato really the big brand in Ireland. And so that's just, I don't know, that's the Irish perspective. I don't know what Wikipedia says about the history of crisps.
Okay, well, a potato chip, or oftenly just known as a chip or a crisp, and it says in British and Irish English, right? Good it's stuff. A thin slice of potato that has been either deep fried, baked, or air fried until crunchy. Mm-hmm. Okay, potato chips form a large part of the snack food and conveniences food market in most Western countries. The global potato chip market generated a total revenue of $16.49 billion in 2005. So you can only imagine how much that's jumped in the almost 20 years since then, right? And at the time, that accounted for 35.5% of the total savory snacks market in that year, $46.1 billion. That's just unbelievable. I mean, it's also... Yeah. You know why the world has many problems, because they can be so tasty and and so many people are buying them. How's that? So the earliest known recipe for what we would call potato chips or crisps nowadays was in 1817. There was a cookbook put out by William Kitchener called The Cook's Oracle. And it was a bestseller in both the UK and in the US. And basically they had a recipe for potatoes fried in slices and shavings. Mm. And it actually just gives you a very quick description of what to do. Peel large potatoes, cut them in shavings round and round as you would peel a lemon, dry them well in a clean cloth, and fry them in lard or dripping. That's it. Wow. That's as simple as it is, not that difficult to make potato chips if that's what you want to do.
might try them homemade. It sounds good. It's interesting. So if I want to stick to the theory that they are
Irish,
then it would have to be that the Brits stole them and published the recipe, which I find entirely believable.
Of course. Not surprising at all. But again, I mean, you mentioned the fact that, you know, they stopped talking at a certain point in this minute, but they're still both laughing. Yeah. You know, it shows they're having a great time. You know, you mentioned the fact that Neil says, you know, that, why do I feel like I'm in summer camp? Which, again, you know, he's finally letting out and letting go. And, allowing himself to enjoy the moment. And he finally realizes that he can. You know, he doesn't need to be such a stick in the mud.
And childhood memories and rediscovering your childhood, you know, it's very significant that he's saying summer camp. He's not saying, you know, this is the best time I've had since the last time I was out with the, you know, regional sales team for drinks or whatever. You know, this is like the pure joyous kind of adventurous fun of childhood. And there's something about summer camp we didn't have summer camp, but we had, you know, just sleepovers and camping outdoors and stuff, that like staying out overnight and being with your friends from school or from scouts or whoever, but you're now in this kind of more exciting, different environment, and just the conversations that I've had with friends of mine growing up at, like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning in the total dark, and you're, you know, just laughing your ass off 1 minute, and then like really strong kind of sharing and bonding another minute, with, you know, no alcohol required because you're young and you don't have that many restrictions.
Inhibitions.
Inhibitions is, thank you, is the word I'm trying to think of. And so, so it's just so perfect, the use of the summer camp. Plus, they're in like a log cabin, you know, Old West themed motel room. So it's just perfect. And it's a one little line, but it's very powerfully evocative of that kind of childhood experience.
Okay, great. And I mean, that's pretty much how this minute ends, with the two of them laughing. You know, Dale goes into the bathroom at some point and you hear the water running, and he, you know, you mentioned the fact that he opens the door and sticks his head out and the water's still running. And for some reason, I thought maybe he's like drawing a bath or something like that. And, you know, he goes back in and turns the water off a few seconds later. So that wasn't really what he was doing, you know, but you still hear him laughing in the other room or in the bathroom. You hear the faucet running and you also hear him laughing, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, and then the water turns off. He comes out of the door. Nice. The light is obviously still off. Del exits the bathroom. And at this point, we see that it looks like he's still trying to catch his breath. And that's the way the minute ends. So the script expands a little bit on the conversation that they have at the beginning of this minute. So Neil then says, "As much trouble as I've had on this little journey, I'm sure someday I'll look back and have a good laugh." Del goes, "Yeah, maybe." Neil goes, "Good night." And then after pausing a second, he goes, "And keep your hands to yourself." Del goes, "If I hold anything, it'll be my own." And then Neil rolls over. Now, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that this means that they're implying in the script that the two of them are once again in the same bed as opposed to in two singles.
Yes.
But I don't think that's really described here. And then it says Neil rolls over. And then Neil goes, "You're going to have your smoke?" And Del goes, "Nope, quitting." And he goes, "My butt's burned up in the car. Consider quitting, will ya?" And Del goes, "My wife used to say that. When she finally stopped." And then Del says, "About 8 years ago in March." And Neil goes, "Good advice.
Oh, wow.
Take it. Good night." And then Del goes, "Sleep tight." So, I mean, this is the whole, all that's described here. We don't have the whole laughing aspect. We don't have the, you know, I wish we were in summer camp and stuff like that. It's very possible that that was ad-libbed by the two of them. You never know.
Yeah.
But it works the way that they do this. Oh. And I mean, I'm glad that they gave us what they gave us in the edited in the final version. What they have here is good, but it's a little too much. It makes it a little more sentimental because, you know, obviously Neil has misinterpreted what he means by the fact that his wife stopped nagging him 8 years ago, you know.
Yeah, and that would be kind of too much of a tip of the hat because Neil would be thinking, why does he remember the month, the year and the month that his wife stopped nagging him about? So it's kind of probably, it would make it too easy for Neil to figure out. And it needs to be something that he can only figure out when he's away from Del later on and reflecting on the whole thing.
Yeah, completely. That's pretty much the way the script deals with it here.
Yeah, what this feeling that I had when I was watching this scene, I thought I was remembering the movie. First of all, I can't believe how much of this movie I do remember because I saw it, you know, a good few times, but I haven't seen it in like probably 25 years or something, you know?
Wow.
But so much of it just had stuck with me and I had seen it at the right age where I just drenched it in, you know, or it just drenched into me rather. And there was this feeling of this scene where they're laughing and I thought, I had a false memory of Del now relaxed in front of Neil, he accidentally lets it slip that he set the car on fire. And then that Neil is like, "Wait a minute, that was your cigarette butt? I thought it was a, you know." So I don't even know what they say. They never talk about why the car goes on fire in the movie. And
in the movie, no. So the I thought that there was up. Another. It's brought up. It is brought up in the script.
Yeah, and so I thought that whole time that I was watching that lovely scene that it's going to turn and he's going to be angry at him again. And he's saying, "You irresponsible. Why did you, you know, if you didn't smoke, you know, we wouldn't have burned the car and blah, blah, blah." And so I loved that it didn't. I was very relieved because the movie needed this kind of tender moment between the two of them and it needed to not be another turn. And I guess what I was doing was, The way the scene played out just a few scenes earlier was that when the car went on fire, or when properly went on fire, and then Neil starts laughing because, Del, you finally did it to yourself. And then there's a turn when they realize about the credit card.
Yeah.
So I thought that pattern was going to repeat itself, and I'm very glad it didn't. Wow. So that was, yeah.
Okay, great. Excellent. Yeah. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Candy, where my guests will give their top five John Candy movies. So what have you got for us, Austin?
Right. Well, I was looking through this, and I have seen fewer John Candy movies than I thought I had. And of course, he did small roles in a lot of movies that I didn't really feel that I could count. You know what I mean? Plus, he had a few real stinkers that I'm not going to put in my top five, and no fault of him. And I absolutely love John Candy. So I kind of wanted it to be a better representation of his career here, but I don't have that many. I've got, there's probably, you know, decent ones I haven't seen, but there's like, I remember one, Going Berserk, when I was a kid. I absolutely hated that movie even back then. And and then there's kind of, so number five on my list is Armed and Dangerous, where he's teamed up with
Eugene Levy.
Oh, what's his name? Eugene Levy, thank you. And that, I think, is pretty bland from what I remember. It's just one of those movies. I had it taped off TV, so I watched it a good few times, but I haven't seen it again, you know, 25, 30 years. So that's number five. Number four, I'm going to put Little Shop of Horrors, because even though it's a huge movie for me, it's not a huge movie for John Candy. So I can't really put it, you know, up there with his performances or anything. But because he just plays that. I remember watching the movie and we hear him on the radio before we see him in the radio station. So I heard him on the radio and I was like, that sounds like John Candy. Why would they get John Candy just to do the voice? And you do later briefly see him. But even then, it's still a tiny role. And then I'm going to say for number three, Great Outdoors. You know that one?
Yeah, of course.
That's, that's with, proper nouns are evading me today.
Dan Aykroyd.
Thank you very much. Great Outdoors. And this, again, is just one I had taped off the TV and just watched it more times than it deserved. I just remember he plays a kind of a hapless, you know, John Candy type. And I would definitely enjoy revisiting some of these movies. And, you know, Great Outdoors, I don't think is going to hold up as anything excellent. But, you know, John Candy is always worth watching, and Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. So number two, I'm going to put Home Alone. He's not in it for that long, but he has nice scenes and he's playing a little bit. I don't know. He does like a Midwestern accent in it or forget what the accent is. And he has this, isn't he an accordion player or what?
Poker.
I love that. I love his little thing about where he's trying to get Catherine O'Hara to remember some of his polka albums. It's just really nice. And number one, good old reliable, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Like, if you had asked me to name a John Candy movie, you know, before coming on this podcast or whatever, there's no competition that it would have been this movie as a hands down winner. He's amazing and it's amazing.
Okay, excellent. So every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a little story of an adventure or misadventure that one of us may have had at some point in our lives. So once again, you got a story for me this week on this to end this Friday. So I remember when I was a senior in high school. So right after we finished, the year after we graduated, so a friend of mine and myself, we painted my car. I had like a used car that was my car, and we painted all these things on it in different colors and stuff like that. something that I think was washable. I don't remember. I'm assuming it
Oh,
was,
wow.
because
Sounds
otherwise my
like
parents
you're
would have probably my parents would have probably killed me if I did really
right.
paint it. But
Sounds like you're
then,
revealing a slightly hippie past.
no, not really. It wasn't tie dye or anything like that. And then we drove from Detroit to Cleveland, which I think, if I remember correctly, is about a 3 hour drive. And met a whole bunch of friends that were in Cleveland, and we had a little fun there. And I remember we were driving somewhere, and I had in my car, must have been about seven or eight of us were packed into the car. And I made a left-hand turn onto some rural highway or whatever it is. And I think I passed somebody. And next thing I know, I'm getting pulled over by a cop.
Wow.
And here I am, an 18-year-old in a foreign city, in a not a foreign city, in a different city than where I live.
Yeah.
And I am ready to crap in my pants at this point, because the last thing I need is for them to have to call my parents and have to come and get me, or have to deal with
Oh,
something or whatever
yeah.
it is. And in the end, the cop said to me, "Did you notice what you were doing?" And I said, "No, what did I do wrong?" He says, "Well, you actually were in a no passing zone and passed there." And I said, "Well, I'm from Detroit. I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry," whatever. And all my friends are being as quiet as possible so that the cop doesn't notice or make a big deal about the fact that there are more people in this car than there should be. And
Oh,
in the end, he
yeah.
goes, "All right, I'm just gonna let you off with a warning, and drive safely." And it's a short story, but still, for me, it was a very pleasant story that
Yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
have to,
You've got a your stories have a theme of close calls tonight. You're getting away with a lot of
Apparently.
stuff. You've led a charmed life.
Apparently.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
that's my little story.
Ooh.
So wow, we finished this week. So why don't you once again, Austin, tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, if you go to malkovichminute.net, you will find episodes of my podcast that you can listen to just there, Malkovich Minute. I suppose I should mention that this is it's a minute movies by minute of the movie being John Malkovich. We haven't actually technically said it all week, but I think most people know. But everybody has a different level of awareness of various movies and stuff. So it is being John Malkovich that we're doing minute by minute on that one. And then I've been guest on loads of different ones. And a recent highlight I might want to point out is a podcast called The Existential Trilogy. And this is three different movies by minute podcasts that are hosted by Robert E.G. Black, Professor Robert E.G. Black, excuse me. And he does Groundhog Day and Ex Machina and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And you go on as a guest and you'll do minutes, if you're on minute seven or whatever, you'll do minute seven of each of those films across the 3 days. And so he's kind of cross-fertilizing and pointing out parallels among these three. And also they're all three of those movies have great kind of philosophical stuff to get sink your teeth into. So that is a great one. I did 1 week on that, and it's one I recommend.
All right, cool. Thank you for that. And once again, for the final time this week, I will mention that anyone can go over to the Silverado Minute and catch me and my good friend Todd from the Forgotten Filmcast, where we talk about minute 75 of Silverado, the 1985 Lawrence Kasdan film that a whole group of us, of I think there were 26 teams, did a minute by minute review of the movie Silverado. So go over there. You can catch the final minute that Todd and I did. You can catch up on everything that happened before, and get everything that will, and continue listening for the next few months till the movie ends. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute, and you can find my website, you can find me on Facebook or on Twitter. So thank you very much, Austin. I've had a very fun week. I hope you have
I
too.
sure have. Yeah, it's been great. I'm looking forward to listening to these, and you can look forward to listening to your minutes of my podcast eventually.
Okay. I have my faith. I have faith in you.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. No, they'll be out. They'll be out. But it's just a matter of what year.
And if not, then you're fine.
Haha, you're fine.